This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lintel. The Vermont legislature doesn't usually meet on Mondays. They have a Tuesday to Friday schedule so these citizen lawmakers can deal with business back home or in their regular professional lives. But things are a little different today. The House is gathering this afternoon to hold a token session where they're not really conducting any business, and in fact, almost no legislators will even be present, but they'll be advancing bills on what's called the notice calendar so they can start taking action on them tomorrow. You see, even though we're nowhere near close to the end of the session, this is a bit of a crunch time. We've already passed the crossover deadline where bills that originate in the House are supposed to be complete and sent over to the Senate and vice versa. But sometimes legislators can squeeze in a big bill or two after crossover that they really want to get passed. Thus, today's unusual session. One of the bills that some House members would really like to get finished and sent over to the Senate is H 170, a bill that deals with the legalization of marijuana. Yes, yet again, lawmakers are trying to figure out if, and just as importantly, how marijuana could be legalized in Vermont. We are going to spend the whole hour talking about this issue. We'll look at what this legislation actually covers, why it's so different from last year's bill, and we'll be hearing the arguments in favor and against statewide legalization. And I'm joined today in VPR's Montpelier studio by Representative Chip Conquest of Wells River, Vice Chair of the House Judiciary Committee and a sponsor of H 170. Representative Conquest, nice to have you with us.
Good morning.
To his left is Representative Jansen Wilhoit of St. Johnsbury, who opposes the bill. Nice to have you on the program today.
Thank you.
And across from me is Representative Sam Young of Glover, who has sponsored his own bill that would go much further in the direction of legalization. Representative Young, nice to talk with you today.
Thanks for having me.
So, Representative Conquest, as I mentioned, you are a sponsor of this legislation. It would allow someone to legally possess an ounce of marijuana, two mature plants, or four immature plants, or I take it all three at the same time is still okay.
Yes.
How did you arrive at those numbers?
Largely, we modeled this legislation after what Washington, D.C. does, which just allows the possession of an ounce of marijuana growing plants but has no retail sales. The original bill had some larger amounts.
I think 2 ounces in possession was going to be okay.
And a larger number of plants. Mm-hmm. But in committee discussion, we decided that what we've got in the bill now really is the right levels for what it is we're trying to accomplish.
Why?
Well, this is really – well, let me step back for just a minute and say that, this bill is designed to address a simple fact about marijuana, which is that any possession is still illegal. Marijuana has been illegal in this country for quite some time, but it wasn't always. And the reason that it's illegal or was made illegal really had nothing to do with public safety or even any particularly widespread societal ills. And that continues to be true, those facts. And, it seemed to many of us that in a free society to infringe on the freedoms of your citizens without any real justification just doesn't make sense. And it also, to me, makes law enforcement's job more difficult. We are, in our committee in particular, are looking for ways to try to increase the practice of what we call community policing, of the law enforcement engaging with the citizens that they're trying to serve and protect. And if you have a fear that law enforcement is going to use your possession of small amounts of marijuana to write you a $200 civil ticket or to use that as a way to sort of pry into your life a little farther, your willingness to engage with police is diminished significantly. And so, for those reasons, it seems like this is the right approach to just say marijuana does not, it's objectively less harmful than other legal substances like alcohol and tobacco, and that there's really no further justification for keeping it illegal. And so we've created a bill that does that, that says you can have the amounts you need for your own use, things that you do in the privacy of your own home we're not going to interfere with, And that's what we're trying to accomplish.
This bill hasn't been debated on the House floor with the full House, but it has passed through the Judiciary Committee. And Representative Wilhoit, you voted against it in committee. So given what Chip Conquest was just saying about the reasons why he believes this is the right bill and the right thing to do, what's your opposition?
Well, thank you, Jane. First off, I think like many individuals in the legislature, including the three that voted against it, our opposition isn't the opposition to the policy decision to legalize certain amounts of marijuana for recreational use. However, we think it's very clear that public safety and health have to be priorities when we do make that decision. And similar to the governor, he's also talked about this being important issues. And among them, any bill that we pass needs to look at questions including how is law enforcement going to measure impairment on the highway? How are we going to ensure that we control access to marijuana to our children? And also, what are the impacts for the overall health of our communities? In committee, we did hear individuals from the health community, and they talked about quite glowingly about the great work that we've done in cessation programs for youth for both alcohol and tobacco. But again, much of that is driven by having a regulated tax market. This bill does none of that. And also the concerns that we have, too, in our society, yes, aren't about marijuana, but it's about the opioid epidemic and heroin. And the concern that I have with this bill as well is that right now, again, unless someone is growing it for themselves, they have no other way to get a legal product. So again, they're going to have to utilize a black market. And I'm not as concerned, obviously, with folks then utilizing the black market for that marijuana. But what happens when they go to their dealer that day and they are told, well, I don't have marijuana today, but I have this pill or this other drug? Those are the concerns that I have.
Do you have evidence that that happens with somebody who's buying marijuana from somebody else?
Yes. I've heard from individuals, numerous individuals that have gotten drugs that are not only marijuana but other drugs from the same individual. And in fact, and just anecdotally, I wasn't there obviously when it was debated in the Senate last year, but then I've heard from individuals from the Senate Judiciary of talking to youth as well during that time and hearing stories about again how youth had access to marijuana now. But again, that's also how they were first introduced to other drugs. And so those are my large concerns. And fortunately, though, there are bills like Sam's Bill 490 that actually creates that market to address those issues. But this bill does none of that. And because of that, I cannot support it.
So do you support Sam Young's bill? And we're going to talk to him in just a second about that.
Again, I got the nice executive summary of it. I know it's a quite larger bill than the two pages. But again, looking at it, I think this is a discussion that we need to have. And again, what I was very adamant with my own committee was, we could have eventually maybe still gotten to 170, but we failed to have this discussion. Let's have a full discussion on all the possibilities before we make this big decision. And until we actually start having discussions of a regulated and taxed market, I cannot support this bill.
So, Representative Young, your bill would create a regulated and taxed market. Can you give us just the sort of thumbnail sketch of the particulars?
So my bill actually it only does the taxation and regulation. It does not legalize marijuana. It actually relies on a bill like H-170 that does legalize. But the high level is that it would allow for cooperatives where somebody could grow plants for up to 10 members. It has regulated sales so basically there's different levels. There's you could get a cultivator's license, you could get a distributor's license, and you could get a retail license. It really focuses on trying to have a small growing. I mean, when some people say that this is kind of like a Colorado model, Colorado has million square foot greenhouses, and this is talking about 500 square foot grow facilities, which is a garage or something like that. It does allow for some larger, but it tries to put kind of front load it towards all the smaller thing. And the largest size grow facility you could have is 10,000 square feet. It different than last year's bill. It is regulated in the Department of Agriculture, because I think that that's really important. If you're looking to have a safe product, you you have people with the facilities for testing for pesticides and microbes, and if this is going to be legal, which is a question still open for debate, but certainly the movement around the region and the country is moving towards legalization, then I think that creating an environment where we have the safest product is important.
So in other words, your bill is sort of a framework for a regulatory system, but it requires other legislative action to actually legalize marijuana before your bill would go into effect.
That's correct. I mean, it could be, added on to H-170, but at this point, I put it really out there as a framework for people to look at as kind of the possibilities, and I didn't know whether or not it would move forward, and it seems that the H-170 approach, kind of the, I would call the libertarian approach, is what has really kind of been preferred by the House.
And do you support H-170, the bill that we're talking about that legalizes small amounts of possession and cultivation?
I do. I think that the drug war has failed us, and whether it's Nixon's drug war or Reagan's drug war or maybe the Trump-Sessions drug war, I want no part of it, particularly when it pertains to marijuana.
Chip Conquest, I know you wanted to jump in there on what Samuel was saying.
So, in response to the idea that people who buy their marijuana on an underground market may be exposed to other other drugs, I'm certain in some cases is true, but that's true now, and would, passing our proposal would at least allow many people who wanted to grow their own plants to get out of that market. So it would reduce that exposure to some degree. The other thing to say about having an unregulated market in terms of not having retail sales is that this will continue for the foreseeable future to be illegal at the federal level. But I think there's a strong argument to be made that at a state level, the states can decide that they're not going to expend their own law enforcement resources on enforcing laws around small amounts of marijuana. If the feds wanted to do that, they certainly could continue to do that or could come to the state and do that, but I think that's unlikely. And so the 10th Amendment really sort of gives us that chance to say what the state is going to do about enforcing those laws. The other thing is that if we went to a regulated market at this point, we need to establish a fairly large regulatory bureaucracy to do that. That's going to require some upfront investment. And I think then you're starting to move out of that sort of 10th Amendment area into something that the feds may have more reason to crack down on. And if that became the case, we've gotten this upfront investment. We may not have gotten the revenue to pay for it. And then we have to dismantle that. If passing what H-170 does becomes problematic in a way that we can no longer stand, then we can change the law fairly easily and go back.
We've got a lot of listener questions about this and a lot of different angles to consider. We're talking today about legalizing marijuana and looking specifically at H-170, a bill that's moving through the House that would do that for small amounts of homegrown marijuana. Hey, podcast listeners, you might have heard about this whole tripod thing. All this month, we're asking you to help a friend try a new podcast. Think of someone special in your life, then recommend a show that's right up their alley. If they're new to this whole podcasting thing, you can walk them through the steps to listen and subscribe. Then please share your recommendation with the hashtag tripod. That's spelled T-R-Y pod. That way we can all get some new recommendations. And thank you for spreading the pod love. I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition. Today we're taking a look at H-170, a bill in the Vermont House that would legalize marijuana. The particulars are interesting because it wouldn't make it legal to sell pot or create any kind of retail system, but it would allow people to possess small amounts and to grow their own. We're talking today with Representative Chip Conquest, who's one of the sponsors of this bill and vice chair of the House Judiciary Committee. with Representative Jansen Wilhoit of St. Johnsbury, who doesn't like H-170 but isn't opposed to all legalization, and with Representative Sam Young of Glover, who does support this bill but also sponsored his own legislation that creates a framework for a regulated and taxed market. You can share your thoughts with us on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. Christian says, we need a form of legalization that allows Vermont's artisan farmers to profit. We are an agricultural state with terrible labor laws and no economy. This should be a no-brainer that enables growers to profit while paying taxes. The more restrictions, the less you'll see a positive effect on the economy. Leah says, we're going to be faced with a cataclysmic budget shortfall in fall of 2017 due to the fact that we currently get about 30% of our revenue from the federal funds, which will be cut drastically. Wake up, Vermont. We need the money, and cannabis is safer than alcohol. Gordon in the Northeast Kingdom says, if this bill passes into law, thousands of otherwise law-abiding citizens will feel more comfortable with law enforcement officers. And maybe, just maybe, that can help to fight our heroin and opioid epidemic. But Jamie responds, possibly with sarcasm, oh yeah, this is a great way to battle the opioid crisis in this country. You can share your thoughts again on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. Representative Wilhoit, I know you wanted to respond to what you were hearing from Representative Conquest.
Well, yes. Thanks, Jane. And much in response also to the listeners, because again, the concern that I have here, and while it is true that we have a black market now, and so those that would actually be exposed to potentially other drugs are going to have that consequence now. Again, my concern is making sure we do have a safe market. Our concerns aren't with marijuana. It are those other drugs, as our listeners have spoken to. And so why not attack the problem now? Why wait and let this happen any further?
But
again,
can I just put a note in here while you're saying that? Because we got a note from Cody who says, yes, this bill still needs work, but please do not let the perfect be the enemy of the good. I'm a defense attorney. I can tell you that for white, middle, and upper-class Vermonters, marijuana is de facto legal. For the more vulnerable, the marijuana laws are used against them. This bill does not have the tax and regulation elements that would make the market safer, reduce financial resources for criminals, create jobs, and create tax revenue, but this is a first step.
Sure, it is a first step. But again, I guess my concern is I just really believe that we have the momentum to actually do more and to do better work here. And quite frankly, too, we also have a governor right now that's resistant to not address those issues. So we can actually bring more people in and do something that makes more sense. And again, as Representative Young mentioned, too, about us having, let's have a safe product. Again, we do have great artisan farmers, and we can actually really have an incredible market as long as we utilize those assets and actually not only do that, but then we'll bring down the safety concerns that so many people have currently with the other drug ills of our state.
Let's go to John, who's calling in from Chelsea. Hi, John. Go right ahead.
Thank you for taking my call. I have two questions, things I've never quite understood as other states legalize marijuana. The first is, I understand it's different than tobacco, but there are potentially some health risks, and those may be discovered later on. We've been able to sue big tobacco, and I help fund helping some people with those health risks. Who will absorb potential liability? And if we tax marijuana, will we set money aside in case there are Vermonters who need health care later on because of this? And the second component, I just don't quite understand how we can essentially break a federal law. In 1980, Vermont delayed raising the drinking age to 18 1 year because Vermont was uncomfortable with it, and we lost our highway funding for that year. So if somebody could explain to me how we can just hold our head high and go against a federal law, I would appreciate the answer to that.
John, I'm going to direct both of your questions here to Representative Young, and you can tackle what you will, Sam, because there are a couple different questions there. But on that question of the drinking age, my understanding of that federal law is that the federal government can't actually compel a state to say it has to be 21, and those highway funds are what are sort of held up as the way the federal government can encourage states to keep 21 as the drinking age, because it wouldn't be against the law to make the drinking age 18, but you would not get those funds, and that's the trade-off. But marijuana is illegal according to federal law. So that's in some ways a sort of a different question because that is a violation of federal law. So with that said, Representative Young, you want to tackle John's questions?
Well, so there's the issue of the way I've always understood it was crossover sanctions. They can't compel us to, have a drinking age that's 21. But, you know, when it comes to the millions of dollars that the federal government gives us for the roads, we are going to
we would lose out if we change. But on marijuana, that is legally prohibited by the federal government. So John's asking, right. how can we break that law?
Yeah, no, I understand that. I mean, right now we're still operating under what is the Cole memo from the Obama Department of Justice, and I think that's an important point. Which Chip is saying, which is, he doesn't want to go further because the federal government could still shut us down, and that's absolutely true. And we there's still kind of a wait and see approach. I mean, I don't think we're totally clear on what the Sessions Justice Department is going to do, but even the implementation timeline of doing a regulatory market is a couple years away, best case scenario, and so we can work on legislation while at the same time keeping our eye on the federal government. And
the other question is, who's liable, and would money be set aside for things like health ramifications?
So in my bill, I did not put in, where the appropriations would go. I really think that the priority should be – I don't think that this is like a cash cow that some people think it is. I think our best case scenario would be that we could provide for prevention, education, and treatment, and particularly treatment of opioids, which is a huge problem in our state, and people aren't able to even access, treatment immediately when they want it. And that's the most important time to be able to get treatment to people. And if we aren't able to come up with those funds, it's a problem. In terms of – I mean, we could certainly put aside some money for liability, but that decision hasn't been made yet. I just kind of left that part blank because I figured it would go through the committee process and those committees would make those decisions.
I want to read a question that we got from Dave who says, out of the gate, this is preposterous. Two plants grown outdoors will yield from 2 to 4 ounces or more each. As soon as it is harvested, you will be in violation of the law. Even a casual user will use up to 1 ounce in a month or two. Then it takes another year to produce a crop. It needs to be available in a retail dispensary or be allowed to be grown in a realistic quantity for personal use. Representative Conquest, so Dave's already worried about, being in violation of the law just by having the legally allowed 2 mature plants. I asked you about how you got to those numbers, but how do you figure that that would work?
So first of all, just in the law, the 1 ounce limit is not you can have the 1 ounce in possession, but the amount that comes from your plant, as long as you keep it in your house, essentially where it was grown, then you can have whatever came off of the plant, and you just can't take more than 1 ounce of it out of the house with you.
Basically, if you have it in your pocket, it needs to be less than 1 ounce.
Exactly. We heard testimony from folks at the Agency of Agriculture who taught us all, I think, a lot, or I'll say taught me anyway, a lot about how marijuana is grown. It seems to vary quite a bit. The amounts that are produced vary widely depending on whether it's grown indoors or outdoors, whether you're very good at growing marijuana. And so it's impossible to really say that a plant will produce X amount. So for that reason, we decided that we wanted to put in a number of plants that would provide any person who wants it for personal use enough to supply themselves over the course of a year. And apparently there's various different ways of either letting it grow to full maturity or having, I can't remember what they call them, but little offshoots of a single mature plant and using those. But in any case, we tried to find a level that provided enough for most people to be able to supply themselves with marijuana for their use over the year so that they could do that if they chose to.
Other comments coming in from listeners. Bob says, simple, alcohol is legal. Weed should be legal. Why is this an issue? Michael in St. Johnsbury calls for a different approach altogether. He says the amount of time spent on this subject has been absurd. I implore all of you that we send to the Capitol to amend our state constitution to permit ballot initiatives. Let us citizens help you on the issues that never seem to be resolved, no matter how much they are talked or studied. And he also says thank you to you for your service to Vermont and to our town. This is especially addressed to Jansen Wilhoit, who apparently, you know, he's talking to you here. You're representing him. And we got a note from Ruth who says, cannabis is not less dangerous than alcohol. It does lead to other drug use. Just ask the doctors who've been advocating against legalization for 2 years. The pro-pot lobby has spent many dollars in Montpelier to keep the health effects, as well as the danger to youth and their growing brains, from the discussion. Vermont already has decriminalized 1 ounce. It's working well. People aren't going to jail. Why do we need to go further? And let's hear from Anna, calling in from Rutland. Hi, Anna. Go ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to say, there was a speaker that had made a comment that people that are just looking for marijuana, that I'm a marijuana smoker, have been smoking for 30 years, has not ever led me to any other drug. But it's very true when you go to a drug dealer and all you want is a bag of marijuana. No, but I've got this. No, but I've got that. I just wanted to say that is so common. And it's introducing people to other drugs when they can't get marijuana. I just wanted to say I agree with that speaker when he said that. That is happening so often.
Anna, would you like to see a legal, regulated market for marijuana?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Thanks for your call. Appreciate that, and appreciate hearing your personal perspective on that. Let's hear from Eli, who's calling in from Burke. Hi, Eli. Go ahead.
Yeah, thank you very much for taking my call, and to the representatives. I think it's really impressive to see how far this discussion has come. And my question is more about the political process. I know we're looking at a potentially tight vote, but this would be going to the Senate next, who did pass a regulation bill last year. So I'm wondering, if this does pass, do you folks expect the Senate to take up regulation, or does everybody pretty much have a clear understanding that the voters' will is more in criminal justice reform, at least for 2017. So just kind of wondering what the process will look like and other concessions that might be made to avoid a veto, and how serious of a consideration that might be. Thank you.
Eli, thanks for the call. Jansen Wilhoit, I mean, you voted against this partly because you don't see a regulated market in it, but could that be something that the Senate adds in that then the House decides, yeah, okay, we can go along with that?
Yes, I would hope so, but again, my concern with it is twofold. The week before we voted, though, first I continue to try to get any committee, not necessarily ours, any committee to just begin the discussion on 490, so we can start having the discussion. Will not happen
on regulation.
On regulation, yeah. But then I also reached out to party leadership in the majority party to find out whether or not it's going to come back as a regulated bill or not. But at least what I was informed was it's that no, nothing's going to happen this year with respect to regulation that would happen in the future. And again, as Sam brought up too, regulation also takes time. And so even if we did do that, we could still have something legal, but then 2 years to develop that regulated market. So now we're looking maybe 3, maybe 4 years down the road. That to me just does not make sense, particularly when you look, every other state that's gone this route has done it the regulated way. The only place it didn't was the District of Columbia. But when we spoke to the commissioner on the phone from there who sponsored the bill, I asked very pointed questions about the different concerns I had. And he admitted, he's like, you're right. He's like, the regulated market is the best way to go. But unfortunately, because they were the District of Columbia and have to be beholden to the federal law, they could not go the regulated route. So again, I think there is a strong push nationwide to do the smart approach. But the smart approach is regulation, not this decriminalization alternative.
Well, we're going to come back to this idea and also some questions that we've gotten from listeners about, is Vermont going to be falling behind when neighboring states are actually legalizing and, excuse me, creating a regulated market? You're listening to Vermont Edition. You can share your thoughts with us at Vermont Edition's webpage at vpr.net. We're going to take a break, and I am going to cough. This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. This is Vermont Edition, and today we're discussing marijuana legalization. And we're looking particularly at H-170, which is a bill that would legalize the possession of small amounts of marijuana and allow people to grow a couple of plants themselves, but does not create a regulated market. We're also talking about that idea of a regulated and taxed market. And we're hearing from many of you at vpr.net. And we're talking with three representatives who have different ideas and perspectives on this bill and on legalization, Representative Chip Conquest, Jansen Wilhoit, and Sam Young. And we have a lot of questions from listeners who are wondering about what's happening in other states and how Vermont might either fit into a more national or regional picture of marijuana legalization, or perhaps in some cases and some perspectives fall behind. Brennan says, the main issue for me is the lack of pushing for regulated and taxed sales of cannabis. The state is struggling for revenue, and this would be a cash cow for the state. Why bother legalizing it if we don't want that tax income? It seems obvious to me, and Massachusetts will reap the tax benefits. Brian says, Massachusetts, Maine, Canada next. We're going to be left with no revenue stream at all. But Jim says, since Vermont is a state sharing a border with Canada, what will be the ramifications of someone crossing the border coming in from Canada? Will the state cooperate with customs as in the past? And some travelers might not realize that Vermont possession limit won't be recognized by customs officers employing federal law. So lots of questions there about how we sort of fit in and what role borders play in that discussion. I don't know which one of you wants to tackle that question, but Sam Young, you're raising your hand.
Well, I think that Massachusetts is going to be the clearest one where we have a lot of border communities. It's going to be de facto legal in southern Vermont anyway. I mean, everyone will just be purchasing marijuana in Massachusetts. I think Canada is definitely going to be a trickier question. It's federally illegal. Crossing a federal border with marijuana is, you know, grounds to seize your car. So nobody should think that that is the right thing to do. And also, you know, I hear this thing sometimes, and it should be said that there's no circumstance where it's okay to drive with marijuana in your system or any other drug, alcohol, anything. Like, that is not the message. I mean, this is the message that we need to be, you know, putting out there loud and clear, that it's just not okay. If you want to use it in the privacy of your own home, that's fine. But operating a car under the influence is not okay.
Well, and this is one of the issues that Governor Scott has mentioned, and many people who are not necessarily opposed to legalization but are concerned about legalization because of those questions about impairment and the lack of a test that can show in real time how impaired you might be. I mean, this is one of the big sticking points for many people. Representative Wilhoit, where do you stand?
Yes, well, on that, I mean, as you may or may not know, Jane, in my day job, actually, I am a public defender, and so I deal with folks that get charged with impaired driving for any drug. But again, what we have now and what actually, you know, passes constitutional muster even in our own state are utilization of drug recognition experts. And in fact, last session, we actually increased the funding for more of those. However, the concern there is actually all those slots haven't been filled, because it is quite an expert field. What I've heard from others, just because someone's a law enforcement officer, that alone doesn't necessarily mean they might actually have the qualifications or skills to get this specialized training. So at least for me, I don't think necessarily we're going to have some kind of roadside test, but we have to figure out a better way to utilize DREs, because going back to even those that really push for the roadside test, we have to remind ourselves there, even with alcohol, those breath tests at the roadside aren't evidentiary. That's just a step to get them back to the barracks. And so I just caution anyone that thinks that's really the be-all, end-all, because that in and of itself wouldn't pass muster. You're going to have something stronger like a DRE.
Chip Conquest, though, we've heard from Governor Scott that he wouldn't support a legalization bill that until he was satisfied that there were adequate tests for impairment. Do you think there's any way that this bill reaches the governor's desk and doesn't get vetoed, should it pass the House and make it through the whole process?
Well, I can't speculate on whether the governor would sign this bill or not. I would say that, you know, I agree, I think, both with Sam and Jansen that, impaired driving is a huge problem, and if you drive impaired, you should be prosecuted, full stop. But, you know, the issues about that exist now. They will continue to exist whether or not we pass this law. And frankly, I don't think that they change very much based on whether or not we pass this law. I was just reading recently that Oregon has come out and an article published said that they have not, in analyzing their data, seen any increase in traffic highway safety issues based on after they legalized there. So, you know, I think, as Jansen mentioned, the DREs are really the way we deal with prosecuting, determining someone's impairment, what they're impaired by, and going ahead and prosecuting those. And we should continue to invest in that training for law enforcement and patrol our highways to make them as safe as they can be.
So you do, though, expect some pushback from the governor on any legalization bill?
You know, I think probably everyone out there who's been listening to the news at all knows that the governor has said that something like he's not opposed to legalization, but he wants to see something connected to highway safety with that. I've never heard him say exactly what that looks like, but I haven't heard also that we're on the House side anyway. Likely to pass anything that would probably directly address his concerns.
Let's go to Dave calling in from Middlebury. Hi, Dave. Your perspective.
Hi, Jane. Hi, Jane. Can you hear me?
We got you.
Excellent. We talk about 170 and 490 as if they're mutually exclusive, but why is it that we can't have both? There seems to be a lot of time left in the legislative session. How do we go and get committee hearings on Sam's bill?
Dave, thanks for the question. You know, they're not mutually exclusive, but Sam Young, you said that you have not gotten much traction for a deeper discussion of your bill.
You know, right now it's in the House General Committee, and they've been working on other bills. We're after crossover. They can start taking testimony on it. I think, you know, a little bit of indication from where the Senate wants to go. I think, you know, predicting what the Senate will do is kind of a fool's errand, and we'll need to wait and see what they're going to do. But
so you're not like walking your bill over to a senator who you're friends with and saying, "Hey, here, why don't you use this? I've already written it for you. You can just create your own bill, and then hey, we're going to have to come together once both bills are passed."
They know it's out there.
Is that a yes? You have walked it over?
No, I haven't. But it's you know, I mean, these discussions are happening. We're on the radio talking about it right now. If the Senate doesn't know that H-490 is out there, they should take a look at it.
And Jansen Wilhoit, would you vote in favor of H-490 if it had come before you? You said you haven't read the whole
thing. I haven't
thing,
read that indication. I think that is something that I could get around. And to Dave's point, too, I don't think they should be mutually exclusive. And as I mentioned before, I, too, was pushing to just start having the discussion on our side because regardless, let's say, in fact, the Senate goes that route. It comes back to us. Guess what? We never had that discussion. So we have to take the time and do our own research to have that discussion, too. So why not begin that discussion now?
We got a note from Mariah who says, "No, thank you. Please vote no to this bill and legalization in Vermont. It's hard enough trying to raise my kids to make good choices in the face of so much popular media that glorifies and normalizes drug and alcohol use. Colorado now has the highest marijuana use rates in the nation among almost all age groups. Please leave the number one status to them." Chip Conquest, do you address at all these questions about ages? I know in the past bills, they've all included an age limit and some education. What about yours?
Yes. So ours would only legalize for those 21 years of age and older. You know, and I think that concern about whether young people would be more likely to use after legalization is a valid concern. But interestingly, every state that has legalized – well, I should back up and say that there's a national, I think, CDC-based survey that goes out called the Youth Risk Behavior Survey that most, if not all, states use. And the states that have legalized have all shown no increase in use by – these are high school students – or or even some slight decline. As a matter of fact, after Vermont decriminalized marijuana, there was in the following 2 years a slight decline in the youth use by high school age students. I'm not arguing that legalizing marijuana will drive youth use down, but there is, you know, the correlation is there anyway. And I found it, you know, quite reassuring to realize that legalization does not lead to greater use by the young people.
We're going to have to leave it there for this discussion, but the floor debate over marijuana legalization, at least H-170, is starting tomorrow in the Vermont House of Representatives, and I want to encourage you to listen live on VPR's House stream. You'll find that at vpr.net. Thanks to Representative Chip Conquest of Wells River, Representative Jansen Wilhoit of St. Johnsbury, and Representative Sam Young of Glover. I appreciate you all slogging through the slushy day today to talk with us about this legislation. Thanks.
Thanks. A pleasure. Thanks.
Good to be here.
And that's our show for today. If you have a comment you'd like to share, leave us a note on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. You can also find us on Facebook or tweet us at Vermont Edition. And follow Vermont Edition in NPR One for our latest content. Vermont Edition is produced by Rick Singeri, Sam Gail Rosen, and Meg Malone. Mary Williams directed this program. Our executive producer is Patty Daniels. And our theme music was composed by Grace Potter and the Nocturnals. I'm Jane Lindholm. Thanks for listening.